Welcome to another edition of Bushido Cast. I'm your host, Craig, and we have Gav.
Did you want me to introduce myself? Gav? Hi, I'm Gav, as you all well know. Just the two of us today, Craig.
Just the two of us, yep. Unfortunately, we couldn't be joined by the others, but no doubt we'll get them on again in the future. So today's show, we just thought we'd get together and quickly catch up on some of the waves that we haven't really had chance to comment on, and to share our thoughts on some of the new profiles.
Yeah. So we're talking about wave 6 and wave 7 today, aren't we? Wave 7 has a nice handy list of models for you to buy on the GCT website. So that's quite an easy one to look at and reference, but wave 6, that's disappeared a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just where we've got some catching up to do, because we did wave 5 on one of the shows, and I was thinking we have not really kind of, we don't sort of always keep track of these things, so yeah, it might be a good thing to cover.
But I'm just referencing that, you know, if people want to have a look at these cards and look up wave 6 as a nice handy kind of complete place on the website, that's not there. Yeah, wave 7 is. Yeah. And you can find all of the wave 6 stuff on the wonderful app, so it's all there. Is wave 7 on the app?
Very handy. I believe so. Yep. I think as soon as it goes on the store, it goes on the app.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So we jump in then. Okay. So the first profile to look at is Tada Oki, who is a mercenary who will work for Silver Moon and Shiho.
Yes, he will. How do we say that? So Tada Oki.
Two of my faction.
Tada Oki.
Tada Oki.
Yeah. So he's 13, right? Now you are the Shiho man, and I suppose the Silver Moon man. Are you seeing a use for him in any of your lists?
He's an interesting profile. I think the actual profile stands up pretty well. I think the whole leech mechanic, kind of representing a sort of mercenary pay for kind of performance mechanic, is pretty cool.
It's really good, yeah.
And Rend is a really good ability just to push his damage output put up a bit. And I think his unique effect is actually very good. Effectively, that is like a dirty fighter kind of ability. So it stops the opposition from declaring the use of special defensive in melee.
Normally you have to pay for dirty fighter. Generally, it's like dirty fighter 1. Is that right?
Yes,
there's a
few models that have it. I think
I say it's notable because he doesn't actually pay for it; he gets it for free. Doesn't
he? He gets it if he leeches, which is good if he uses a leech trait. So I mean that's good because he'll stock up on ki and he'll get an extra benefit. The only thing I would say is that it is special defenses in melee and rather than special attacks and defenses. So it's a little bit more niche, but that's really good. And cutting down the opportunity for enemies to sort of sidestep defense, counter-strike defense and such it can be situationally very powerful. And
but on this model as well, with Rend as a feat that you're paying for brutal, you want him to be damaging, don't you? So getting rid of special defences is potentially pretty clutch, right?
It's handy, yeah, it's handy. I guess the question is whether he's worth the 13 rides, given you can get some very cheap models in both Shiho and Silver Moon that will kind of challenge that, how efficient that looks. I think in particular Silver Moon, they've got 8 rice, Yokuhan, who are pretty good and will work within the actual themes. Yeah. So that's a bit to work out. But I like it as a concept, and it'll be interesting to see how that develops, that whole mercenary thing. We've seen one other mercenary that's been kind of previewed. He's not in this wave, but he's previewed, and he's got a similar kind of mechanic where if he leeches, he gets a bonus. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these start to stack up and kind of work. I mean, you can just leech the same one key across multiple models. So that could be quite fun where you sort of just chain leech the same key. So it's an interesting way of being able to move key around and get multiple effects.
Right.
And just how that kind of stacks up will be interesting. I think the trick is if you make a mercenary too cheap, they become kind of like a benefit of going for all in profile. But at the same time, you sort of do need some line troops. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that all comes together.
I like it. And I think, maybe a shade too expensive at 13 rice, but I agree that, you can't make them too cheap. And as well, I'm thinking the same thing about the Jung. We'll talk about one of the Jung characters later. But just having more and more sort of grunts and, more basic profiles just gives that opportunity just to do something a little bit different, bring a different list to a tournament. And I like it.
Yeah. And I think background wise, it's pretty cool as well, just given how Shiho in particular used mercenaries, but also is fittingly Silver Moonwood as well. Mm-hmm. So it will be interesting to see how they develop that. We had the other guy who recently came out with the, I'm trying to think of his name, with the coin feet. So yes. It's kind of interesting to see kind of, how some of these kind of economic abilities are being introduced to the game, and it seems to revolve around kind of key being either distributed or leashed. So that's
which I think that
was one of the guy from the start. So.
Yeah, I mean we keep calling it key, don't we? But the chi mechanic is like such a big part of the game. Getting it flowing around and moving about is really good. I imagine I play Rokans, so it happens anyway, but for those factions that don't necessarily move key around so much, it's a fun little thing to do.
That was a Hiboku who has got the coin feet. So it's interactions like that. He also works for Silver Moon, and he can distribute key out and then get bodyguard as well. So yeah, I'm interested to see how, if there's enough of these things going on, how do they start kind of gelling together?
Key for everybody.
Kind of interesting.
It's going to be like the new Year of the Risen Sun type card next. And it'd be like, everybody gets maximum key at all times.
Well, I mean, the thing with profiles like this is they are kind of vulnerable just being a one key model and no traits and abilities to sort of help if fear causes come along. And I mean that's kind of where potentially there's a bit of a liability.
I've been caught out that way against you with a list full of one key models against your roses, and I just couldn't do anything at all, could I?
Can't even test for the disguise. So it's kind of how do you build around that. I mean, we've seen Jung lists with quite a few one key models do absolutely fine, and same with Silver Moon, because there's normally other models in the list that can comfortably pass fear test or disguise test and so on. So it doesn't.
It's almost like the one key models are going in there as your chaff to sort of fill out the rest of your list that's doing what you want it to do, right?
Yeah, or you get ways to give them bravery, leadership, that kind of stuff, and then suddenly it's not such a problem. It's not so clear to me right now how you do that. I mean, certainly in Shiho you can. You can give the leadership out to Ronin for one of the themes.
Anyway, we're talking
so there definitely are ways.
This first guy, let's move on. Who's next?
Yep. He's a fairly straightforward profile card as well. So the next one was Sora, who is an Ashigaru that works for the Minamoto.
Yes. Just look.
So he is. He's got peaks under his special under his kind of keywords. Mm-hmm. And I'd say I don't play Minamoto, but this guy is definitely tempting me.
He's great. He's a fabulous model, isn't he? Big chunky man.
He's just, I just really like the idea. So he kind of connects with the sort of the snow witches and the bears, that kind of side of Minamoto. Yeah. And so he's got that kind of that connection with Blizzard that I think is really cool. One of his unique effects is that if Blizzard is active, he can ignore camouflage because he can kind of see where their tracks are in the snow. Thematic, so that's really, that is thematic, but also I think pretty cool. I guess it gives Minamoto a way to combat camouflage because I don't think they naturally get any sixth sense or anything like that. But it does require Blizzard to be in play, which has got some pros and cons. And he doesn't get slow from Blizzard, but still. That's just, oh, sorry, just wild declare and perform charge action. But yeah, that's fine because it would be just slow. So I think like he's a good example of what you can get for 14 rice. Considering he's only one rice more than the last guy we looked at, he's got the armor, he's got all these all these
he's
traits.
Got so much stuff. Yeah, reach, powerful attack one. Okay, he's a three dice combat profile, but he can boost. And you know what else is he using his key on? He can get resistance too, but that's really situational, and that's instant as well. So okay, and then chill to give him all the space.
Give him slow out's quite nice. It's kind of like Minamoto, don't strike first, but you striking last has, you know, effectively the same game effect. With reach and aware, he's quite difficult for some factions to deal with. He's perfect anti-ninja tech.
Oh yeah, totally.
But also my Chiho would have a bit of a problem with him, just because we can't surprise him, and that's just going to make it a lot harder to deal with.
I think he just looks like a cracking all-round profile for 14 rice. Again, he's got the problem of only one key generated.
Yes, that is a bit of a problem, but less of a problem with him because he's got steadfast and he's got that conditioning. Mm-hmm. So if he has to go against something that's got fear, he can make it work still. He just, you know, will lose a dice. And conditioning means he's got a chance of kind of, you know, putting up a defense in an opposed key test situation. He's got the courage as well to help a little bit as well. So,
he's got
a lot. And if all else fails, he's got armor three and seven wounds.
He looks like just a really decent all round profile that, you know, some factions would absolutely kill for. I don't play Minamoto, so is he worth 14 rice within the faction? Does he actually allow for some new builds? That would be interesting. Who knows?
Yeah, that is interesting.
Maybe we'll get Minamoto player on to talk about him.
Yeah, it's the synergies with Blizzard that seem to be kind of the thing with him and how that kind of all stacks together. But I mean, he looks good for 14 rice, but Minamoto profiles often do look very good for their rice because the whole faction kind of struggles with mobility, though, you know, they still move around at a normal rate, but are pretty good. So it's not a big surprise. And interested to see where they take that one, given it seems to be leaning into the, as you said, sort of the whole Blizzard stuff, bear and they're kind of their, I'm trying to think what the name of the family is, but they're sort of the samurai sorceresses that they have.
I can't remember. Let me have a look.
Yeah, that looks pretty cool. Next I was going to talk about was Haruto, Ito Haruto.
Yes. Let me find him.
So again, a very rice efficient profile. We're talking 13 rice for a samurai. So that's nice. He's a free melee dice model with Paras melee and armor 2. So kind of that already feels like a pretty good starting point. And then he's just got a lot of other stuff on top. Again, he's got a lot of specials. So his combo attack 0, size set defense 0, fantastic kind of things to have for the cost.
What's this? He's also got a bit of
jump up and
for weakness.
Well, I think there's a usual Ito thing of 5 wounds and so he's a little bit fragile, but the armor 2 certainly helps with that. Split attack he has, but it's going to be hard to make much use of that just because he'll be outnumbered. So they get the penalty to melee pull for one for having the assist.
It's an extra option for you to shut down Taki in this area, though, isn't it?
It's handy for like absolute chaff, like the monkeys and things like that. It's really good for that. At worst, sometimes you just need to strip activations, and he can actually just go in defense. So sometimes he might just be trying to do that. So that I can see a few niche cases, but it seems to be just like the core model is good, and then he's just got some extra situational abilities that could be quite handy. And he doesn't seem to be paying a lot for those.
Doesn't take melee penalties for running, and he's moving 5. Yeah. So he's getting around, right?
Yep.
He's getting around, so he can get quite healthy. Yeah. So I mean, he's So you can run, what, 7.5 and then do a melee engage. Yeah, that's a decent threat range.
I kind of feel like he is kind of being designed a little bit to stop turn one objective grabbing, because he can get up there and challenge those kind of things. And he's got, like I said, a split attack kind of thing also, just to help kind of manage some of the annoying low cost things that are kind of sometimes thrown in the way to enable that play.
I wouldn't want to see him across the table from me, because he's really just that movement and effectiveness is for the rice cost, you know, it's useful.
Yeah, with turn one, he's got a threat range of 12.5.
You're going to be on the back foot, right? Thinking, oh, I can't really move there because he can hit me. It's not nice.
Yeah. And he's going to come in still with, you know, pretty decent dice and everything. So if you've run up the table and become exhausted, you're very vulnerable to him. So you have to keep an eye on that. If you can figure out ways to channel to him, which is not hard in Ito, you can boost his melee a bit further as well. So he can become a real threat. He has got a few, like, if that wasn't enough, he does already have a few things on the back of the card to help a few extra things. Asp Strike is always useful, just to get the old lightning reflexes. Very Ito, it's a classic Ito thing. And then Precision Strike, just to up his damage that little bit further. But really, I think the profile is a very efficient profile. And for 13 rides, the core of that profile does what you need, and then all this extra stuff is just, you know, the icing on the cake.
If you're able to hit, I mean, you're going to be able to choose what you hit, and as long as you're hitting something that doesn't have reach or lightning reflexes, you don't have to invest in the Asp Strike. And then you know by turn two, you've generated enough key yourself for a boost dice, and you're not at penalty for running. You know, he's good. I like him a lot. Anyway, moving on. Who's next? He gets a glowing endorsement.
Itsubi.
This is the Dissension guy, yeah?
Dissension, yeah. Itsubi. So we have seen these kind of medium-sized Tengu before. And I think this is kind of like a character version. They already have a named version of this level, and it just expands kind of the whole guard, making like a line with pretty good defensive capabilities, parrying and such.
It's great, all those birds with wings like forming a defensive line. So I mean, does he add anything that's like really sort of, you know, game changing in terms of that line? I'm not really that familiar with Tengu, and I'm great, I don't know anything.
I can only kind of say so much on this one as well. I guess it's like, you know, seems like a fair enough profile for...
I don't know, he's 18 rice, right, which is on the expensive side.
It is, but I mean, look at some of those abilities. For two key, friendly bushy models do not suffer the melee penalty for having run. So a bit like the model we're just talking about, another fast model that can get up table. Tengu are fantastic at movement anyway, so this is just another movement trick that is kind of helping their bushi out. And I think they're the ones who don't typically have quite near.
It's a simple feat, right? So it's not coming without cost, and I'm just wondering how situational that's going to be. How many of those bushi are you going to have having run up that you then want to go, okay, two key to. You've got enough of these guys that you just want to go bang, hit you in the face.
I think it steers you down this whole kind of guard line where you start looking at getting a few of these medium size Tengu models, and
it's about positioning it, right? It's about getting it up on the table where you want it to be to present that guard line that the enemy can't break through. And have it.
And Darren used to play that. I think the first few times he played Dissension, because he had the models, he did try it out.
Yeah.
And the whole kind of guard kind of thing, because they can rely on that defensive line trait, but they've also got a unique that helps them as well.
And they can stop models running between them as well, can't they? So they've got a lot more sort of board presence.
and they count as cover and stuff. So they're quite good at defending like your back line, let's say. But I think he always found it was a little bit tricky to really make it work.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting, is this the model that suddenly makes it kind of all gel together? Because it arguably adds a bit more mobility and can kind of really make that line, you know, very defensive.
Where's Darren when you need him, eh? He can really tell us all about this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think it looks like a fairly good defensive model, but it's still got, you know, some threat with +2 damage.
He's interesting, right? He's the kind of model I'm looking at him going, oh, he's nice. Oh, I wonder what like that's going to look like on the table, a little line of guard Tengu, and it's making me want to start the faction. So it needs to go away. Can we talk about the next one, please?
Yeah, sure.
Christ, I'll find Tengu.
So yeah, so Akoshi. So that is a Kota Yure model. It's an Ashigaru.
With a fantastic skeleton card. The artwork on the card where his kind of skeleton face is just coming out at you. It's amazing.
Yeah, so that will go into the Yuta sublist. So that's the theme list, so that's good. So that gives them another option. I think that's quite handy because they are a sub-faction in a way, yeah. But it's kind of all themed list, but it's kind of cool to have options. So you can go a bit more skeleton heavy, have another guy in the middle, so you can have four of these now, and play kind of with a little bit more combat potential, I suppose.
I really like these guys my villagers with double buffalo. They love these guys, these skeletons. They eat them for breakfast. Did you know that buffalo like bones?
You had a good run with that, but they can surprise you, these guys, if you get caught out with them, because they can normally afford to either go all defensive or all attack. And yeah, I think this one's interesting because he can get an extra dice through coordinated attack Ashigaru. Now, I think there is one more skeleton who is an Ashigaru, and you can potentially I think you can potentially control an enemy Ashigaru, but that's going to be hard. So there's a little bit of synergy there, but I think
how are you getting the control?
If you can make it work,
another Ashigaru. Where does that come from?
Just control in general.
I see. Right. So somebody else in the faction can control an enemy Ashigaru, and then you benefit from coordinated attack. Right. So I've just been a bit slow.
No, that's right. It's a bit of a random niche case. To be honest, I think the main way of pulling that off though would be to actually have Eco, the other Ashigaru skeleton, and just kind of use them together. And there's no reason why you wouldn't really. They're all pretty cheap. Yeah. And
Eco, mentioned, the other named skeleton is 13 rice. This one that we're talking about here. Akoshi is 12 rice. So what is it that justifies the point drop? Are they they're not very different, are they? I'm just trying to.
I think, well, Eco's got brutal. That's pretty good. That definitely helps him put out the damage.
But brutal's worth much more than one rice. So
there's a few other differences, but I think brutal is one of the big ones. I mean, in a way, this guy's slightly more defensive. With reach and push defense, he naturally will be a bit more defensive.
Got you. That's what I'm looking for, a little bit of insight in terms of what makes the card different.
The one thing we could say about him is he's also armor 2, which is pretty sweet. I think the other guy's only armor 1.
He is armor 1, yeah. The other one's armor 2.
So he's got a little bit more staying power. Yeah, he's the defensive one, really. So but that's not a bad thing.
You want them to be defensive because, you know, tough to take out.
Yes, and it's pretty critical. I find with Yure, Yuta, even, that if you can break through that midline, the game ends pretty quickly for you, as you found out, if you get through it. But if you can't, then you start taking a lot of damage, and you tend to fold. So it does tend to be a bit of a very fine tipping point between you kind of breaking through, or them kind of holding and then kind of getting you in the counterattack.
Absolutely. And I was being flippant, you know, they are really, really, you know, worryingly powerful models. You know, I did have a particularly good game with Buffalo against them, but the key there was that he engaged my Buffalo with the skeletons, so I got to benefit from the tireless and just like drop a skeleton a turn because they were coming into me. So just don't do that if you're fighting Buffalo. And then you can survive that turn, because you know it's crucial that the Buffalo gets as many activations as possible to do the damage.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So on to
Wave 7.
Ooh,
exciting.
Yeah.
This is on the website if you want to follow along with what we're talking about.
Yeah, so these are up for pre-order. So
have you ordered them all, Craig, or some, or?
I've ordered, actually, for me it was quite a relevant month because I play most of these factions apart from the Ryu and Temple Rokan. So yeah, so it was a pretty good month for me,
or bad month depending on, you know,
which way you look at it. Yeah.
I could have ordered tuning myself the Bakumono one, but because I picked up this big Bakumono, well, Savage Wave, almost the whole force, but I've not used it, not painted it yet. It seems a little bit, I don't need him just yet. I'll paint some of the ones I've got first.
Yeah. I think, well, after this chat, you may want to pick him up.
Well, yeah, I know. He looks brilliant. He looks fantastic, and we'll get to him, yeah. But I haven't got any other models to play the game with yet, so
I'll That's fair
paint some ones first.
Shall we start with the Ryu Ashigaru Kokyo? Yep. Take any offers on how to say that. So I think this is a card that actually has been spooled a little while ago, so we have known about that for a bit. First, I'd like to say it's a really cool model.
He's a fan,
I really do like this model, and it's
does he come with like flags that you can put out?
Yes.
What?
He's all about flags and then shooting people.
Does the model come with like little flags you can put out?
No, unfortunately. It does have a flag in the guy's hand's got, he's got a flag.
It's on the base, yeah.
But I don't think you can. I think you have to make your own flags.
Make my own flag.
Maybe you can figure out a way around it.
I don't need to.
Yeah, I think.
It would be really cool to have him actually sticking flags on the table, wouldn't it?
You can have up to three of those flags at any one point, so. Yeah, I mean, essentially, he's a he's a ranged model, so he's trying to shoot stuff at range. Very strong gun, as these Arquebuses
are. I think.
Yep, that's the one. And yeah,
so I did play against in a tournament a Ryu gun line with four Arquebus, I think, and then. There was a samurai knocking around. And it was pretty scary. It was the first time, well, the only time ever in Bushido I felt like I was sort of charging into a gun line. Because I don't think any other faction does anything like it, right? So, but it didn't seem particularly good. My list was a bit too powerful. Maybe I had villagers, so I had chaff and I had buffalo, and I managed to overwhelm it before it did too much damage to me. But with
this might be what it needs to kind of make it a bit more.
Well, I thought playing against it with some other factions, I'd have just been absolutely brutalized before I made it across the table.
Yeah.
So
I think that is the thing with, I found with range and Bushido, it can be situationally amazing. But
so I'm slightly worried really with this model that he's going to encourage that gun line sort of play, and it'll be more devastating because it's never much of a game, is it, when you're just running into shots and taking models off.
It's interesting. Potentially, it feels, well, I mean, I generally feel with this wave, it feels like a bit of an arms race, which we'll get to, because he's not the only guy bringing in some range. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. It doesn't necessarily need to be with a load of other kind of guns.
No.
There are other sources of range, like the Grey Pilgrim, the Dragon, and such. So there are plenty of other ways to kind of combine him in your gameplay. Yeah. But essentially, that's what you're paying for. You're paying for like a decent range model that can put these flags out, and the flags effectively give you say minus two to hit. It sounds wrong, but you know how Bushido works with range.
Yes.
So it kind of takes away, it'll probably take away cover in a way, but maybe hopefully a bit, maybe hopefully you'll get a model who's out of cover and you also get this, in which case it's going to get hit really hard. Yeah.
I should say, even though I said worry, I think he's fantastic. Like the thematic, the way the rules work and stuff will make for much more entertaining games. So I don't want to be too naysay about gun lines when you've got him in here, because he's, you're actually moving him around and making some decisions and stuff. And it's a bit more.
Yeah. Tactical. And I think because it's kind of like, it kind of makes you, because you can, there is counterplay because you can destroy these flags and you can avoid them. And maybe that's kind of actually probably more effective sometimes use of them, because they slow the enemy down or make them avoid areas. So there's some interesting kind of things that can happen on the back of that. So yeah, it looks like an interesting profile. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether that kind of, I still don't think a fully range list is always going to be, you know, advisable just because of the number of factions that can get around that kind of play. Yeah. But
unless you're taking agile models with weapons, a Grey Pilgrim, you know, dragons.
Yeah,
stuff like that,
and that's the thing. Like, this is a classic kind of model where, I mean, he's got push defense one, but if he gets locked in combat with melee two, he's probably going to be stuck there. So the easiest way to negate a gun line is obviously just get up close to them and stick to them. I think that's you know, that's going to be,
he's not
why
really sitting at the back either, is he?
Yeah. So, but mixing him in with other stuff could work. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yes, it will. Over to you, video players, to show us what's with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's next?
Next one, I think you'll probably have a view on. It's a Temple of Rokan Mina.
Yeah.
13 rice.
Mina, I might say.
What do you make of Mina?
Well, I say welcome to the faction. I think she's a little bit jug, isn't she, with her what's it called? Her feet, where she,
the tidal flow. That's kind of in game mechanics how they represent the tide. Mm. You kind of normally move one way then another. So that's pretty cool to see that come through, and lots of sort of drags and pushes, that kind
and
of
we,
stuff.
We should probably clarify on the tidal flow and on the movement bit. Just the language and how it works. So I don't think I've actually used it in game, like with, so there's a junk card that does pretty much the same thing, ebb and flow, I think.
Yeah.
And the language on this, so it's move the model up to 4 inches toward an enemy table edge, right? Doesn't say directly toward. So as long as you're moving towards, you could almost do like a parallel line almost to the table edge you're going to. Is that correct? Because in the next sentence, at the end of the activation, move this model 4 inches directly toward the opposite table edge. That's much more restrictive. So have you got a little bit more flexibility in where you go on the first move, but the second move is directly back to the other table edge? Is that right? Is that how it's played?
That's worth checking. I must admit, I always thought it was like directly towards and directly away, but you're right. I wonder whether that is a oversight or whether that is the intent on that.
Worth checking, because I always thought with ebb and flow and the other ones, that 4 inches directly towards the table edge is just a bit limiting. You need to prepare for it a bit too much. That makes sense. You've got to be in exactly the right place for it to actually work, which you can do. You can absolutely do. But
yeah, I mean, I think just looking at ebb and flow, the card that also says move 2 inches towards an enemy table edge. And yeah, I think it has to say,
does it say directly away?
Directly. Directly norm. Yeah, it says directly away, but not towards. Mm, so that's
interesting.
That's interesting. Maybe that's
the intention. It would make sense. Maybe. Because, you know, the tides aren't straight out and back, are they?
Well, it would definitely give you more control.
We wouldn't have
Moines
then, would we? Yeah, she's the longshore drift of Bushido. Let's be scientific about it.
Well, I think you can definitely use that ability in quite a few different ways.
Absolutely.
Because it's an active, you've got a lot of flexibility with how you use that. You can kind of go in at the same time as another model, get a melee assist, and then move away. You can go in and kind of protect an objective.
just getting in the way and stuff, you know, all of the
getting in the way,
and,
really.
And Rokan really seems to be, you know, getting more and more full of movement tricks. I would love to get Mina and a list with Taki and Nuseru, just to have those all of those movement shenanigans going on, and then a bit, you know, a bit Rotan, a bit, you know, for the counter punch and stuff. I think she's a really interesting profile for the faction. I love that she's, you know, just 13 rice as an extra water monk. You know, she's going to maybe potentially replace your what's his name, the other water monk, Riku, in like every initiation list. There's like a Riku for your water element because he's such a tank. Maybe she will come in, saves you that extra 3 rice. He's 17, she's 14. To maybe unlock a couple of different builds, which I haven't played with yet, but I will.
Again, first, another kind of efficient model, 13 rice. You seem to be getting a lot of specials and a lot of traits there, and powerful key feats and everything. So pretty good on the surface of it. And like most monks,
certainly Kata,
good key generation, and
jump up
can boost everything.
Everything boosted for 2. Yeah, she's nice.
A bit of heal as well, which kind of plays into the water mechanic.
Yeah, although heal 1 just stands out to me as being just a little bit... I kind of look at heal 2 it's really nice, but you need to stack it for it to...
It's good if there's bleed around, because it will remove bleed token at the same time. So I think sometimes you just need to stop the chip damage as well with monks. So I think that could be handy, especially if you've got other ways to heal. Like if you've got your virtue effects and things like that, you could potentially start healing an awful lot. So I think it's a nice little extra. It may not be as impactful because only heal 1, so it'd be interesting to see, does it really get used?
I'm not scoffing at it, you know, but I don't think it get used very often just because heal 1.
It's going to be one of those pretty situational ones, I imagine, unless you can figure out some gameplay for it. But it seems a really good profile, and I think just getting used to how you get the most out of tidal flow will probably be how to maximize that model.
Totally.
But also probably quite good in things like zones and stuff where she's got a lot of specials that can kind of help you move things around. So
drag attack, push defense, force back attack, all 0. That's a flexible set.
It's very, very flexible set of skills there.
Nice specials. As well is like one of those dynamic kind of, you know, floating on the elements, just like Botan was.
Yes.
So I like where they go with
I think she looks like she's got a bit more control than Botan, but Botan was a fire monk, so I think that seemed only right. Actually, was he fire and air?
He is fire and air,
So that seems only right. So,
I think those two in particular, so Mina, the new one, and Botan, the last one, will look great next to each other, you know?
I think if you put these with the starter set box, you'd have a really nice looking set.
Yes.
Like if I was just walking past a gaming stall and saw that, that would definitely pull me in because it just looks visually very cool. And because they've all got kind of their elements out kind of to a certain extent, a bit more subtle in the starter box. Yeah. These kind of just build on that. So I did actually see it was like an orange version at the UK Games Expo, so it must have been like an early kind of printout or something. And it did look pretty good. So if it ends up looking like something like that,
I'm going to be pretty cool. Here looking at the model on my PC screen, it looks lovely. You know, the waves are the same sort of quality and the same type of sculpt as like we've seen on Ryujin and the Jung Witches. So that water will paint up really nice, and then you've just got this lovely, you know, orange clothed monk in the middle. It's just gonna look great painted it up. Can't wait. Anyway, moving on.
So Tuning, who is a Bakumono.
Tuning and who was the last one? We got Trapping, right? Tuning.
Tuning.
They're all quite fun little they do what they say on the tin, right?
Yeah, little puns going on there. So this guy, I think he's going to be, I wouldn't say all include, but he's going to be pretty popular. Most Bakumono players squeeze in like an archer or something like that, and he just seems to be kind of just a great swap out for that kind of point cost.
So what, they squeeze in an archer just to use up some points, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, generally you want the numbers, and sometimes you just need a body to do scenario work or tie up something, you know, something kind of expendable that's cheap. Now, he probably isn't something you want to actually throw away, because effectively he will allow you to summon two horde back mono a turn.
Yeah.
So alone is pretty massive.
Can you just clarify something for me? It used to be the fact that you could summon as many as you wanted, right? And then that was reined in.
Sort of. I think they always intended it to be one per turn.
Right.
But the actual card was once per back mono per turn. Right. The actual horde card. So they FAQ'd it to say, no, it should just be once per turn. So when it first came out, or when we first played, I did summon like as many as I wanted because there was no restrictions, and
that was too much. Right?
It did get a bit crazy. Yeah. You can get like Fayod Key with these guys quite easily, and then suddenly you're summoning a lot of models.
Yeah. I was struggling to even kill one as well. I remember like Master Poe like wailing on one Bakumono for about three activations, not killing him.
If you get unlucky with the more defensive ones, then you can be a bit frustrating at times. But with the kind of change in over time that was viewed as kind of being excessive, so they reined it in and said actually you can only do it once per turn, and I guess now they're thinking
that's not enough.
Once is not enough, but doing it in a way like this at least kind of makes you makes you kind of like have to do something to keep that ability on the go. Yeah. You have to look after this model.
I guess my question is, if you're going to be playing Bakumono, that's such an important ability to be able to summon two rather than one.
It's pretty critical to how a whole Bakumono works. Include
a Bakumono list?
Well, if you're building it around trying to get the numbers, I think he is, or close to it. I think the other thing he does that kind of arguably puts him in a very kind of
rally, right?
Key position is rally, because at the moment they're quite vulnerable to some of the Urey event cards that can just put fear out to everything.
Yeah.
I think it's Nightmares Unleashed. They're very vulnerable to
and then
that.
They get extra key for everyone that's frightened as well, don't they? Yeah, it's nasty.
Yes.
Nasty, that is.
Which is going to be a lot of your guys with their cowardly. And I know you can kind of mitigate it to a certain extent with like the drummer and stuff like that, but it is a very hard counter to their gameplay. There's also the Shiho trick of Ore from Takua. So there's a few ways of putting out mass fear counters.
Yeah.
And these kind of things tend to completely crush Bakumono in my experience.
And what I found with Bakumono is that the support models that you really don't want to get killed because they're so useful are really hard to get to through all the numbers. So
they live really and die by their back line, and so they will try to keep
this
them.
Pulse is 8 inches as well, so you're covering quite a lot of the board.
Yeah, Rally is a really generous range on, and
very generous.
Like they shouldn't have any problem getting free key for it, and it being active as well just makes it very easy to pull off. So I can see that being another big reason why you'd want to play it, because I'll be honest, often if a Bakumono fails his fear test, it's almost certainly going to die that turn.
Right.
You could boost its melee stat back, but it's normally cheaper just to buy a new one at the end of the turn.
Yeah.
So, but this guy suddenly he will be a good counter to that. So not only will you perhaps not lose as many Bakumono during the turn, but you'll be able to summon an extra Bakumono. So in terms of horde mechanics, that's pretty massive.
Yes,
for 7 rice, I think he's going to make up his points pretty much turn one. So
totally.
Yeah, there's a lot of strong arguments to include him.
Great.
That camouflage 6 and big base, bit of a problem, to be honest. So it could be a bit difficult to keep him alive. And you can only have so much backline with Bakumono.
Yeah.
So it's... it does take away from something else, but I think that's fine given that this guy will effectively summon in another Bakumono, so you're kind of not really losing anything there.
I think so, we're clutching at straws to find bad downsides. He's an auto include. Who's next?
so
I will buy them eventually. It's just I've got too many models to paint first.
So Fuku, Silver Moon guy.
Yes, he looks great. So I know that you've played into the luck, not played into, you've played with the luck mechanic quite a lot with Silver Moon. So I'm just starting my Silver Moon journey. I really haven't looked at luck yet. I'm just going. I even listened back to the Bushido cast Starter Box and Beyond episode. That was
all right. There you go.
Little plug there. So yeah, I mean, he looks
back catalog.
He looks really fun, really interesting, fabulous model.
What do you make of him? He's very interesting all round, and I mean, essentially, he's another support model in Silver Moon.
Another one.
Silver Moon have got a lot of support models and a lot of competition for support. But that aside, he actually is very unique in what he does. It's very different. So he's kind of opened up a lot of different synergies, which I really like. Side note, he's in Asura and Golden Dawn. Golden Dawn's one of the Gumi that we kind of know about. We haven't seen quite so much from. I think Harakuchi might be from it, but it's I don't think it's on his card that he's got. I don't think he's got that keyword on his card.
Not according to the app, anyway. I just searched.
No, so it's kind of the gambling side of things. So it'd be interesting again. Like, is that kind of leading somewhere? You know, or is it future proofing against something down the line? I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see.
No, in GTT, it's going to be leading somewhere, isn't it?
It's a bit like the Minamoto guy. It feels like, you know, it feels like too good to not build on. Yeah. But we'll see.
Maybe he's friends with Ken.
Yeah, could be the elusive Ken. He's a very interesting card, as I said, and he's got a lot of different synergies. So it's kind of hard to know where to start with. Really,
have you given it enough thought to say if you were going to take him, what list you would put him in? Or at least where you start.
A little bit.
Spell the beans.
So there's a lot of different models that pair very well with him. So anything that makes rerolls is going to be good. So Harakuchi kind of comes up right there. Yeah. Anything that does rerolls is good. So it could even be Rose's Dodge. That could actually be good. And why that is, it's good because you get one extra key token every time an effect causes a dice to be rerolled.
Yeah.
But Silver Moon actually have plenty of special cards that can enable rerolls as well. And you know, you've got Luck Kami and all sorts of things. You've got rerolls all over the place, basically. Yeah. So I think that actually means he's very flexible with where he potentially could go. And you could also quite simply rely on the opposition's rerolls.
Absolutely. So I mean, the opposition my peasants, right? I'm getting luck rerolls from the cows constantly.
Yep.
There's other rerolls all over the place, yeah.
There's loads of rerolls that could potentially come into play. And interestingly, it might make your opposition not want to use the Paris melee if it's fueling him. So it's an interesting kind of dynamic there. Silver Moon don't have they don't really have a lot of fear causes, but they do have a few. The Buto have low level fear, and obviously they can get access to the gorillas and so on. So
Yeah. Potentially
that means your opposition might, you know, be reluctant to use bravery, and if they do, you get a bit of a bonus there. So there's some really cool things you can kind of think of, you know. Yeah. Make an interesting interaction.
I think it would just be a fun little mechanic to be, you know, playing out on the table and just keep your eye on, you know, oh, reroll, great.
Yeah.
Reroll, great.
The main thing is every time they do something, you sort of get something. So you always feel like you got something out of it. So yeah, they pass a fear test, but hey, you got a key token. So I think that's pretty cool. So although he only generates one key, he should get a lot of key, and he can hold 10, which is phenomenal. He should be kind of like pretty stacked full of key most of the time. So that's going to be really interesting to see kind of how that works. And it's going
to
be
boost himself up
a bit mashup dependent.
LA dice if he wanted to. That's not nothing to sniff at, is it?
You can only double it. So yeah, four but four. Still, it's still pretty good. if you really wanted to, but arguably that's not a good use of his key. And
he's got much better things to do.
And he definitely has got some cool things to do. So most of the things he wants to do with key will cost three. So he does things in threes. he has got a range attack as well, but that's completely different to a normal range attack. It doesn't do damage. It creates a mishap token. So just covering that off quickly, if you don't want to spend key, if you just want to zap someone effectively with a range attack, you'll put a mishap token on them, and then that opposition must flip a coin if they get damaged, and if it goes wrong for them, then they get double damage. So it's kind of the opposite of he's all in, which he can play on himself, where if he gets hit and he wins the flip, he avoids all damage. Yep. So that's really good. If you think he's going to get targeted, it's an instant as well. You can put that up, and then you've got what seems like a 50-50 chance of avoiding damage.
Mm-hmm.
But he can use luck tokens to reflip his own flips. So as the player, so you can't reflip misfortunes, because it's the opposition who makes that. But you can reflip all in flips,
right?
So that's pretty cool.
You're working out all of these different. That's why you went into the luck thing, wasn't it? Because you could do all the stats.
There's some interesting. Yeah, there's all these kind of like little synergies and little things, combos you can pull off. And but is that worth a luck token? If it keeps him alive, quite possibly, a 75% chance of basically avoiding any damage on the support model. That's normally enough, though, just to make people just not want to, you know, bother with him, because the chances of him just, you know, absorbing the damage is too high. With certain, you know, in combat they'll probably do it, but probably it from range they'll think twice, because it might just not be worth the resource invested.
Sure.
So it's a good way to protect him, and so that's pretty cool. And I like the kind of the fact that he can do something good for him or bad for the enemy. So that's kind of mirroring he can do there.
Well, I've picked him up. I think I've pre-ordered him. Certainly looks interesting.
Okay.
And I want to paint him because he's nice.
I mean, he's just cool. It's the model looks really cool with the kind of cards and the magic kind of going on.
Throw some paints on it. Just to
take it. Yeah. And I guess the other thing to say about him is Gambler's Ruin. So that can, again, kind of be played on your stuff or the opposition stuff. On your stuff, you basically get to choose which dice to remove, and from a test, and it's an so you roll additional dice for a test, and you can choose which dice to remove. So you can play around with what outcome is favorable to you, whether you want it to be a good result or a bad result or a specific result for some reason. You can play around with the dice effectively. So that's got plenty of good applications. You can either debuff the opposition or buff up your own stuff, or make kind of things happen because you really need dice to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So given all the mechanics that Silver Moon have already to force rerolls and set dice and stuff like that, that seems pretty interesting. You can counterplay with it just by getting base to base, which obviously is something that I think people want to do with this guy, just to try and lock him down.
Sure.
To also lock down his range attack. But it's a pretty powerful ability if you can keep it going. And I think that's kind of going to be pretty fun to play with. Mm. It can definitely make your melee models that a little bit better and debuff theirs. So
well worth the 13 rice, we think, cool. As long as you can squeeze them into a list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So we've mentioned Haruki. I think that there's a few other models that, you know, would easily work well with this guy. Araki would work well with him because Believe is good, and rerolls and luck tokens are good. Kaidi.
Yeah.
He would work well because he normally works well with most things, leaning more to the sort of the fortune side. So I can see him being quite popular, but that is kind of Silver Moon all over. They have really good support models, and then it gets very competitive which one you actually go for. So shall we move on?
Yes, we've got, I think, two more models to cover.
Yep. Yeah, so Taiho is Kazoku works with Jung, unsurprisingly. What is surprising is that he's got a portable cannon.
He does. I mean, is it really portable? That's the question. I suppose everything is portable.
He's going around with it.
Based on model, yeah.
That seems pretty cool. So I think this is pretty cool. It's like Jobun, but kind of like even more extreme.
Yeah. The model as well is very ripped on the other recent guy. Name elusive, Musa. You know, Musa, the guy with the two knives who's kind of sprinting forwards. He's got a similar kind of look to him. So he's a chunky lad running. I think they both have that vibe, right? I think they'll look good next to each other, Musa and Taiho.
Yep.
Yeah. But in terms of his card and how he plays, yeah, it's a damn big gun, right? So
yeah, I mean, he is he's a more sturdy platform. I think he's got 7 wounds and he's got strong. He's also got slow, unfortunately, but still jump up, good old John.
But he can't move and fire, right?
That's only his unique, but that's just because of the size of the cannon. But I mean, that is the interesting thing. Let's face it, it's all about the cannon.
Yeah.
So he's only got 2 ammo on that, so he can only shoot it twice. And he starts the game with 2 reload.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to you can get extra activations on Kozoku fairly easily in some of the themes and some of the other models, I think, can dish that out. So you can clear those on the first turn or with a bit of help, maybe sooner. And then you can, you can start.
Well, it's 18 inch range, right? So at least that removes, with the other guy with the gun, what's his, Jobun, he's got 3 different range bands, right? So you're constantly thinking, do I get a little bit closer? Is it worth it? Or do I take a shot from long range? At least with this guy, it's just the 1 range band, you know. You're within 8.
There's no need for him to get up the table unless he wants to, just for position.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is good. I mean, he's got no short range, but as you say, arguably, he's got no long range. And 18 inches is pretty much, it's got to be one of the longest, if not longest, weapon in the game now. So that's pretty phenomenal. And, it does mean that you can potentially attack things from a direction they weren't necessarily expecting. I'm thinking like Queen of the Waves and stuff like that, where you can do the placement effects and
Kamikaze
as well.
You can't remove reload markers when you're
at health. You only get 2 shots this guy. He doesn't have to be, you know, on the first turn. I actually think, and we'll get on to why, but I actually think it's quite good if you can wait for the enemy to bunch up in the middle, particularly on zone scenarios.
Oh, yeah.
And then lob them with a lob in their cannonball.
And even the threat of being able to is a massive deterrent, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's why I think if you've got the patience to flank him on from a position where the enemy's going to struggle to deal with him, he could be quite a constant thorn in the side. Now, he is a lot of rice, so for that kind of thing to work, there's a lot of trade-offs and things you have to figure out. So I'd be interested to see how people actually implement
him. I wonder whether you could make him the most expensive guy on a list and give him pacifism and just keep him out of it until he's... Because you could reload without ruining pacifism, right?
I think so, yeah.
And at 16 rice, I think there's enough in the jungle list to be able to do that.
Well, you're thinking of your sharks and Kaizoku and Kami kind of list. Yeah,
that
yeah.
Time no, I you got could to definitely. Use them.
You could definitely give that a go. So that's what I think. I think he's a very interesting character. He's not necessarily going to make every Jung list, but he is adding something that we have. I think we mentioned before, like, you know, more damage dealing in Kaizoku seem to be happening now. So that's pretty cool because, you know, before they were kind of quite nice, cheap, efficient models. That's great, but it's good to see kind of something a bit different.
But I mean, looking at him, Taiho, he's twice the cost of a Conan.
Yeah.
Like literally, you can get 2 Conan for 1 of him.
You
know, and I suppose it's kind of doubles down on with him. You're either going to hit big and like game changingly so, or do nothing.
And that's what I mean. It's a bit of an arms race because you've got this guy, you've got the Ryu guy with long range, yeah. And at the same time, you've got endless hordes of Bakumono, and you've got Silver Moon guys that even if you hit, nothing happens.
Yeah.
So it does feel kind of like a bit of an arms race in some way,
and a little bit more extreme, you mean? But the old models still seem to have their place, right? I just said, you know, two Koenin or one of this guy Taiho with the cannon. Not sure what I'd prefer, actually.
Well, that's what I said. It's not necessarily going to make every list
for a fun times list. It's cool. Like, just yeah, let's throw some cannonballs around. I take Taiho every time because he does look fun. Whether he's competitive or not, reliably so, probably not.
Yeah, that's kind of my feel. I was just checked the Arcubus actually has a range 18 as well. So
yeah,
but that's probably one that it's still a very long range gun, and long range one for Jiang as well.
And it doesn't have the options based cannon for like slam attack and doing damage to other models and putting fire out and stuff. And they might do fire.
So we should talk more about the cannon. So the cannon, unsurprisingly, hits very hard, plus four damage, pierce two, and stun attack zero. So it's gonna hurt. And if they survive, they get stunned.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. Then the cannon manipulation bit, I think, is where it gets really interesting.
So they can choose one of the following actions, right? Whenever they fire the cannon.
And it's once per turn as well. So I don't think there's no kind of weird stacking kind of stuff.
You're not going to get two shots off in a turn, are you, ever, really?
Well, it's more if you had like lots of key on him for some reason, you could kind of have multiple effects. But yeah, it does limit it to you basically pick one of these. So slam attack, I think, it's probably going to be a little bit situational because I think you just want to generally do the damage. And I think the slam attack bit will halve the damage. But if you want to prone them and move them, then
it's a good option. That's a good option. But it's, slam attack zero, so it's not going to affect your...
If they're prone and stunned, you wouldn't get a stun as well. So yeah, but if you're prone,
why wouldn't you
it's
get
still
the
pretty
stun
good.
As well?
You can use one special.
Oh, yes, so, yes, yes. It's replacing the
you have to choose which
stun
one.
Attack as the special with a slam attack. Correct, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But you're still going to leave them in a pretty bad state. So I guess it's just that situation where, I don't know, maybe it's a durable model or you just rather get it out of a zone or something. Yeah. It's just kind of, but you don't think you're going to kill it. That sort of situationally could be very handy. The one I really like is where you just draw a line.
This next one is
between
fantastic,
the models. And this is another reason why you might want to flank him or wait for the right moment and get kind of a few positions, run them up on the side or placement effects into play.
Now, you say this is the one that you like, right? You know what I've been playing with lately. I've been painting all of the fire in the whole world.
All your fire.
Feeling like a pyromaniac. Exactly. So he fits in perfectly to everything I'm trying out now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's another source of R and Jung, which is great to see.
On him and Ken Ditch, and like just spinning and putting out, fire two markers all over the place.
And the cool thing with this, you don't need to hit. You just draw the line and then you see if you hit, great. But I think that's nice because it might well be that you just don't ever see a good target or it's too hard to hit them or whatever. Yeah. You do have to still be able to target them. But then you potentially, you can get lots of fire damage on things that potentially you couldn't normally target and so on. So I think that's pretty cool.
Like you say, it's situational because you can't move and fire. But well worth looking out for as an option. Yeah, if you can put out like four fire two markers, then that's a decent enough shot, right? Even if you don't do anything to your target.
Exactly. You might take the shot just to put out the fire rather than actually worry too much about the actual shot. Or get both. So that could be very, very good. And the last one is the kind of the more like a mortar shot where you place a 2-inch pulse on the target. And the interesting thing is that everything gets hit with the same success level as the target model and gets a stun marker. So if you can get a very like easy to hit model standing, an Oni, and then he's got lots of back mono around him. That's kind of like one of the...
That's the dream shot, isn't it?
Yeah, where you go in, you hit him, get a good success level, and all the back mono get hit and... Yeah. They either die or get severely wounded and left with a stun marker.
I think you're only ever going to pull that off, that shot, with somebody who doesn't know what this guy does.
They would be, yeah, it'd be unlikely that anyone would allow you to get that. But scenarios in Bushido do tend to force you to...
They do, but they would also force you to deal with him first.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. You, if you've got no counter to that model and he could do this. So again, it's like, it's interest in arms race kind of thing. So like, what's your counter to this? Like, you know, a giant bat rider for Savage Waves be an ideal counter, that kind of thing. So it's very, very cool though. So I'd be interested to see how he really works on the table. He seems very, like, if he hits, could do a lot of damage, could be very powerful.
And he'll get painted within a couple of days of him arriving, and then we'll get a game in, right? He's, I think, out of all of the models, he's the one I'm looking forward to using the most.
He's the one that you're most excited by.
Because he's most different, I think. Just having that big, you know, I love my artillery in other games, you know. Boom, big guns.
Yeah, I'm really, really, it's really hard for me to say which I actually prefer this month, because I think tuning's going to be really the thing just to get my back motto list back on the table. Fuku, I like Fuku because he kind of synergizes with a lot of the older models. Yeah. So suddenly he brings them back in, kind of thing, makes them more relevant, makes you want to play around with different combinations.
Yeah, sure.
So really, I really like that when a newer model makes you want to explore your
perfect for me, because I'm older just race. Now with Silver Moon exploring the older models, you know, sort of building up from scratch. Yeah. So he's perfect to, you know, work in to all of
just
that.
To work, anyway, yeah, play there's, around. There's what, one we what kind of synergies yet. Work?
There's one.
Well, I was about to say, but then there's this last guy who... Nico, who I think is just awesome model.
It's incredible.
Well, they're all they're all great models, but
Moonlight.
It's a bleeding moon, Moonlight.
Yeah, he is great, and oh my god, his abilities! Wow, you don't want to get pounced, do you?
No. So the whole thing with this guy is that if he's in cover, he can surprise you, and if you're surprised, then
he gets everything.
He gets so many things. Yeah. It gets a bit crazy. So
the first one is Banzai, I think. So
yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm pretty sure the way it's meant to work is that if he can surprise you, he gets Banzai. And it's the wording's a little bit funny. I don't want to get hung up on it too much, but it's a bit weird because if you declare like a melee to get the surprise, but then you get Banzai, like did you? Like it does say when this model would surprise an enemy model and stuff like that. So
I think you're allowed to.
I think that's the intent.
Yeah, you're allowed to treat a model like that's further away than just melee range as being your target for the surprise that would then.
Well, because if you declare a charge, it's kind of the sequencing's a little bit. It kind of is a little bit. I think the main thing is if you declare a charge, then it would become a Banzai charge, and therefore you would only use one activation.
Correct.
Normally that's not a problem because you get double move and plus two strength, but charges are slightly more restricted than melee in terms of the route and things like that. So I guess it's good that he also can do a melee just in case he needs a bit more flexibility. And if he's not so worried about
he's got light Banzai. So it's not Cloud Walk, but
he does, But not Cloud Walk,
It's not
so
slowing down.
So I think there's a little bit of technical kind of detail there anyway, but that side, I think the intent is like he'll literally pounce on things, so melee or charge away,
and he moves gets six, a Banzai effect. So a Banzai charge
very fast.
This guy is 12 inches, and then from there, because it's Banzai and only cost him one activation, he could do another pounce charge from 12 inches from there.
He could,
just
he could
indeed. That's the main thing about him is like, and when he does hit, he hits hard. Potentially,
he's a proper missile, and. He may not last very long, but he'll probably take quite a lot down, I suspect.
Yeah.
So he hits surprisingly hard. So if he Banzai, that's plus two strength for a charge.
Yeah.
He gets plus two strength on his bite attack.
Yeah.
And he can pay one to make it a powerful attack as well.
Yeah.
The ideal situation is that they've got a death sentence on them because he's got vengeance death sentence. So that's plus one strength as well.
Yeah.
So he'd be plus two for the charge, plus two for his bite based profile, potentially plus three for the powerful attack, and then potentially another plus one for death sentence.
Yeah, so it's what, eight strength?
So it sounds like eight. Yeah. There might even be other ways of doing it, but it sounds like eight. Now, I think the challenge is, I don't think there's many ways to get death sentence out at the moment. There's one I think one of the missions of the Fiends,
yes,
does Fiends put a death sentence out. Mm-hmm. And he could go into it because he can go into any list with a Bleeding Moon Ninja. So he could potentially go into that. Or it might well be that they've got some cars coming down the line, like cycle cars, yeah, stuff like that.
It's an assassination it's mission. It's
niche
at
the moment. Yeah, and, so it's quite niche. Yeah. Potentially, like that person will clear it if they've got the key for turn one. Yeah. But if they don't, this is fast enough to actually get them turn one. So there is a window of opportunity there. So that's pretty cool. That would be the ideal situation because, you know, not only would they be down a dice for your surprise, but you'll be up a dice because of death sentence. Yeah. So, yeah.
Which you have to clear in the start.
It's even better than that, actually, thinking about that, because they've got a death sentence and you've got vengeance death sentence. So they've got death sentence on them.
Yeah.
And then you've got vengeance on top of that. So you get brutal plus one additional strength.
Yes.
And the extra dice. So yeah. So I think you at that point it's looking very oh, and because they're surprised, you get assassin.
Yeah. It's gonna just wreck face this thing.
Yeah, if you can, even if you don't hit, and that gives you the extra dice you need for the powerful attack one as well. So you at that point you're just putting it all in attack, and even if you get, you're pretty much maxing the damage table at that point. It almost doesn't really matter about the dice. You'll just be, you know, you'll just be getting the maximum damage. It just matters about the success level, and with them down the dice, you should be able to get a good success level. You probably don't actually need the powerful attack, to be honest, but. It's just getting that death sentence out there in the first place. I think even without death sentence, he's still very good though, and could do a lot of damage.
He's amazing. It's just such a fun thing to use. Like, yeah, I'm not really using Ninja, but yeah, he's a cracker.
Yeah, he's got a second attack as well. Get sharp 2 and combo attack 0. So that's pretty good against some things. I can think of some Cowan Erosion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, combo attack 0 with that.
Yeah, but it's a sharp as well. It's just like, cause combo attack's good, but tough 3 cuts it down. But that sharp will help out a lot.
Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah, so that's nice, a nicer extra thing to have. He's got sidestep 0 as well. So that's always handy if he needs to get out of a situation. Mm-hmm. And he's just got so many traits here. It's, it's a good bunch. So he's fitting into ninjas. So he's assassin, camouflage, light footed, jump up. Those are kind of fairly common. Maybe not so much the jump up on every model, but yeah, they're fairly common things they've got. Dodge is always welcome. Just keep him alive a little longer. Fear 5 is handy just to help him go into certain targets and also to potentially keep the lower key models off for him. Aloof, you would expect because he is a creature, an animal, I should say. Lightning reflexes just seems fantastic. Yeah. It's the last thing you really want is someone being able to strike first when you're trying to do this sort of alpha strike.
Absolutely.
He actually brings Sixth Sense, which I don't think ninjas have a lot of. So that's pretty cool. And Steadfast, just because, you know, in case you do fail your fear test, you still want to go in.
Yeah.
It's just so much. It's really, really, really good. But I know what ninjas are like. They're kind of like a jigsaw puzzle when you're building a list. Mm-hmm. And although he may only be 14 rights, and it feels like a lot, I think there's an opportunity cost of you normally have to lose a ninja for that spot. It's very hard to not lose
I'm thinking about the ninja though, and some of them that you stick in. You know, you do put in beat sticks like Katsumi and Rin, and you know they're you look at, you know, for Rin is 24 rice. She's more survivable and more reliable, but that threat projection and that being able to just go out and murder things, I don't think there's nothing in the ninja force at the moment that really has that, is there?
Not quite like this. No. Carapan are very different.
Yeah, exactly. They're not massive beat sticks, are they? So I just think it'll open up some really interesting new builds.
Well, this is definitely very Bleeding Moon.
Totally.
So I'm excited about it, and I think it's a cool model. So
you're excited
I'm
about me painting it for you.
Yeah,
you should paint this one yourself. It's a good one. But no, I don't. So that wraps us up, doesn't it? In our little whistle stop.
It pretty much does. I think we could technically talk about the two pilgrims, Dark and Grey Pilgrim, that came out.
But I think
yeah, I think they kind of need a more dedicated session, just because for them, I kind of feel, well, one, the Grey Pilgrim is essentially it's what we all know, but it's got an upgrade card, and the Dark Pilgrim is a whole new thing. But both of them, I think, kind of,
I think we could talk
sort of models you don't just throw in. You normally build around them a bit.
Each of the factions, I think, we could go through and how they might integrate a pilgrim.
That's it. I think it offers something very different to each of the factions. And the Dark Pilgrim in particular, it's because it gets so much better when the stuns are out. Yeah. I think naturally you're going to want to play into that. So it'll be really interesting to see
how much stun you can generate in a list. Yeah. I'm sure there's plenty of ideas.
How much do you have to? Yeah, exactly. And does it really work? Because you can probably build a list that puts out a lot of stuns, but does it still add up in the end to a competent list? So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see.
As with my fire experiments at the moment, I can put out a lot of fire, but does it...
How do you round it out?
Does it make a list, yeah. Right, brilliant then. So thanks. Great chat, Craig. See you next time, right?
Yep. Fantastic. Thanks, Gav. Thanks, listeners. Hope you enjoyed that. And till next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.